Welcome to the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. This show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Today, we talk with Deanna Autumn Leaf Suazo and Mandy Stapleford about the origin of a project. As spectators of art, the general public has the pleasure of viewing a finished work. However, each artist has their muse, inspiration, or even conversations with friends or strangers, which oftentimes leads to that spark of imagination and creativity. From use of machinery and materials such as films, books, found objects, and the endless beauty and mysteries of the natural world, these two women allow us a peek inside of what sparks the idea and process of creating a finished piece of art and a body of work. Deanna Autumn Leaf Suazo grew up on the tribal lands of Taos, Pueblo, New Mexico. She is attending the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, where she is studying studio arts with an emphasis in painting. Suazo predominantly works with prism-colored markers, Indian black ink, acrylic paint on vintage music sheets, and antique ledger documents collected from multiple sources. All of her work has a distinctive style that incorporates influences from her cultural heritage combined with pop culture themes and Japanese anime. Let's listen to Chelsea Reedy's conversation with Deanna Autumn Leaf Suazo and what has influenced her work.
Your 2D work incorporates a Japanese anime aesthetic. Tell me about that influence and how it came about.
Yeah, so I am heavily influenced by Nayuki Takeuchi. She is the creator of Sailor Moon. And Sailor Moon is one of Japanese most famous animes that was brought over to America, but in a way was Americanized. So I look more towards the original Japanese version, and it's primarily female characters that take on these roles of heroism, and they're pretty much fighting evil through what they say, the power of the moon. And I strongly connect to the moon because of my culture. I remember my great-grandmother would tell my mom, if you're ever lonely, just talk to the moon and the moon will always listen. So that's always something I remembered, and that's something I can connect to Sailor Moon. And also what I love about these characters is that individually they have these different characteristics, but all of them have like this this courage and this sass. But at the same time, they could be very like clumsy, sweet, and caring for other people. So I see that within my own work too, within specifically my 2D work. A lot of people my age and my generation, they were really into like Sailor Moon, Pokemon, Digimon, of course, Dragon Ball Z. So all of those were like television shows that we would get together and watch. And so that's like part of the family aspect, you know, and family is greatly important.
So another distinct aspect of your current 2D work is that you make the images on vintage music sheet and antique ledger documents. So how did using that kind of paper become part of your project and your process?
Yeah, so it actually began as an accident. I would go to monotype sessions, so printmaking sessions with my parents at I think it's called Graphic Prints. I forget their name. They're right in Taos, actually. So we would go there and watch them, and sometimes they would let us help them. And if they had extra material left over, they would let us create something towards the end of their session. And I remember they ran out of handmade paper, cotton paper, which they would print on. And so I found a phone book and I ripped some sheets out of there. And I was really young. I was probably like 4 or 5 years old when I did this. And I just gave it to my dad and he printed it on there. And it came out so cool. And so ever since then, I've been experimenting with different types of paper. Like if I find like a cool sheet of paper, like a cool document, I would just draw on it. And in my parents' artist books that they used to collect of other artists, I would draw in them. And I remember they didn't like that, so they had to hide them. But yeah, and one of the earliest memories I can remember too is that we were heading to the herd market, and I wanted to put in one of the pieces into the market. And I didn't have any paper. I only had my drawing material. And we stayed at a hotel. And I remember looking through the drawers, and I found this really neat semi-diesel truck inspection paper. And I had like an image of the diesel truck and all this other information I didn't really know it or understand at the time. So I drew one of my girls onto it. And this is when I started to develop it. So it was really simple then. And it came out so cool looking. So ever since I'm working on different papers. And our family, we used to travel a lot. So we would take road trips to different art shows. And we would stop at flea markets or antique malls. And whenever we'd stop there, I would go look for paper right away. Any type of, the oldest paper I could find, the better. And I would just draw on them. And I've always respected ledger art too. It's from a lot of the Plains natives, and they documented a lot of their stories. And it was primarily males that documented these stories too. So I fell in love with the stories and the way they represented themselves through this medium. And I was like, well, what better way to represent us through music sheet? Because as Pueblo people, we're known to be festive people. So we dance, we make songs together, we dance together, we eat as a community. And so I've just kind of connected pieces here and there. And that's what brought my work to what it is now today.
I'm not familiar with the term. You use the term ledger art. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so ledger art began with a lot of different Plains tribes. They were taken away from their community. Most of them were men, and they were imprisoned by the U.S. military, pretty much, by U.S. Army cavalry. And so they were put into, I forget what exact place, it's Fort something, but that was located in Florida. They were pretty much put into prison. And these officers, well, one officer specifically gave them ledger paper because it was available, you know. They had no use for it. They gave them ledger paper, and these men started to record, like, their war stories, stories of survival, stories of hunting, traditional ceremony. And the more they created these images, a lot of non-tribal people started to notice it. And so it's kind of odd that wealthy non-tribal people would go to these prisons to watch them draw, like, as entertainment. And then, or they would buy the pieces. So in a way, they're making, not them themselves individually were making a commission from it, but the prison was making a commission from it.
So one of the things I really appreciate in your work is obviously the design aspect, but there's the colors of the fabrics. On your website, you describe that you weave together traditional attire from the Pueblos of New Mexico or Navajo traditional wares, Pueblo and Navajo representations, and anime stylized figures and graffiti aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the color?
Yeah, so I started drawing at a very young age, and that was just, you know, Crayola in the beginning. So, you know, the access to all these different colors, I wouldn't think about what color to use. I would just pick it up. And I guess through that whole process and through each year in developing, I started to notice what colors match better with which ones, you know. And then I wasn't formally taught when I was younger, like, complementary colors, you know, like blues and oranges. I kind of just developed that on my own. And also watching my parents paint too. They're both 2D artists, and They primarily paint vibrant Pueblo scenes and New Mexico architecture or landscapes. And I noticed they didn't use colors that you would find naturally. So they wouldn't find, or they wouldn't use colors that, you know, a tree is green. They would use like blues, pinks, and different colors, different tones to bring out this tree, or to even bring out adobe buildings. Like their shadows weren't grays. Their shadows were purples, pinks, and browns. And so by watching them and also just practicing, that's when I really started to notice what colors go with which. And as far as graffiti, I'm not too sure what drew me to graffiti at a very young age, but I've always been super fascinated by these public art forms on buildings, on trains, you know, under a bridge, anywhere in the public. And I remember going to Barnes and Noble really young, and I picked up this huge graffiti book. I still have it today. It's a really thick, it's World Graffiti. And I would always just look at it. And then one day I just like begged my parents, please buy it for me. And they did. And I would just like look through it. And what I love about graffiti is the line movement. I love the line movement and how everything just has like this flow to it. And it's, to me, it's beautiful, and I love that anyone can see it too. So with the graffiti aesthetic portion into my art, that's where I bring it into the tribal designs. So in a way, I'm creating these tribal designs. I harmonize it together with graffiti.
Okay, so you're in your fourth year at IAIA, and you're studying studio arts with an emphasis on painting. And I'm curious, when you reflect on the last 3 years, do you see your work evolving, or how do you see your work evolving? Or what has that time, the last 3 years there, meant for you?
Yeah, so I've seen a huge difference in my work now. And what I'm trying to do now is not bring my characters, I'm not trying to make them realistic proportionally. I'm still sticking to that, you know, stylized character. But with it, I'm making them, how would you say, more defined, more have to have more depth, and I'm focusing on the detail in the work. And I'm also bringing more influence from my own tribal community. So back then, I would just paint and then be like, I'm representing my people. But now it's I'm expressing feminism, modernism, and what I see my people as today, because we've endured through a lot of challenges, and we don't see our people like how a lot of people see us, you know, primitive or even back in the 18th century. I'm representing us today. And so that's how my work has been growing. And I love looking through my photos and seeing the progress of each piece and how much detail I'm putting into them now compared to like 4 years ago.
I think you're working on a project with your sister right now, and if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my project with my sister, we haven't gotten the time to really put our full energy into it yet. She's a very busy person. I'm really busy, especially these next few weeks. I'll be extremely busy. So we are creating this project. It's a collaboration makeup palette. She created a makeup palette, and the names on it are all based off of like things you would find in Native culture, but they're very modern things. So fry bread or... she made a lip gloss called Mutton Grease, which is pretty funny to like a lot of Navajo and Dinés, because, you know, we know what mutton grease is. We know how it moisturizes our lips. So for her to make this lip gloss, it's hilarious, but at the same time, you know, it represents us in a way. So we are creating a palette, a fall time palette, and through this, she let me pick out the colors, and she's also letting me design it. She's putting all the work in pretty much. I'm just there to be like, I like this, I like that. And then after the palette is done and when we start to sell it, we are going to give a lot of our proceeds back to our community. And we're talking about art kits to give to the younger children in our community as a therapeutic way for them to express themselves. We're doing this because I know a lot of kids and a lot of their parents are having trouble finding ways to entertain their children. And so I think art kits would help out not only the parents, but would help out the kids, you know, to create some energy momentum.
So what's coming up in these next few weeks for you? You mentioned you're super busy.
Yeah. So not only is there feast day on September 30th, which our family is having a very small intimate feast. It's just going to be our immediate family. But also during that time, I will be starting a crosswalk mural right into house. I'm not sure of the location yet, which that information kind of makes me nervous, but I already have the colors planned out. I already have the design planned out. It's already gridded to what I want it to be. And so I can just go in there and quickly chalk it up, fill it in, and then the day after feast day, start painting it, you know?
Awesome. I so appreciate you taking time to chat and share kind of what's in your head and your heart. And for me, this has been such a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for considering me having this interview. I love talking about my work, and I would love to be more involved into bringing my work back home into Taos. And so I've been pushing for murals in the town of Taos, murals in my own community. And that's a dream of mine, is to bring my work into a public format for everyone to see, you know, everyone that goes to Taos, and for my tribal community to see someone represent them and to represent someone that looks like them, you know, through this art form. And I think that will bring empowerment to my own people.
That was Chelsea Reedy speaking with Deanna Suazo. When we come back, we will begin my conversation with Mandy Stapleford, a local sculpturist and host of the podcast Good News, Good Planet. But first, let's listen to Talk to Leaf, a song by Paul Ivan Fraidum, a musician and painter based out of Reykjavik, Iceland. Welcome back to the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. Our next guest, Mandy Stapleford, was born in Arden, Delaware. Her work as a sculpture artist has been inspired by ancient architectural ornamentation and the magical wonders of her surrounding environment. Stapleford's first experience in producing public exhibitions began in 1994 when she created, curated, and produced a multi-artist outdoor art exhibition, Sculpture on the Creek 1 and 2. In addition to her sculptural work, Stapleford's creative endeavors and love for land and people one day unexpectedly led her to begin the weekly broadcast Good News, Good Planet, a 2-minute radio spot focused on bringing good news about good people doing good things to support not only each other, but the planet we all share. Naturally, most living things start from seed, and so I start my conversation with Stapleford on what inspires her work and how her love for seeds sparked the Seed Project and her utilitarian series of seed sculptures. A lot of your work is, I guess the best way to describe it is like a collection of series. Where does the inspiration from your work come from? And can you sort of walk us through the process that you go through?
I will go back and forth between working on a series or doing sort of individual one-of-a-kind pieces. And what begins a series can be any number of things. For example, when I have a series called the Modique Beasts, which are small 2-inch tiles with animal type imagery on them, sculpted faces, and sometimes the whole animal on this little 2-inch tile. And I started doing those in Raku. And when the first one, it was really just sort of an experiment. I was teaching a Raku class, and I didn't want to make a pot. I just thought, oh, I'll make a little tile with a face on it. And it came out of the Raku so exceptionally well. Like, I was so excited when I saw it, like it, and that's what happens. I get this spark, like, ooh, I want to do more of this.
Right.
And so it literally led to 103 pieces. Like, I just kept making them, and it ran its course, really. I think that's one of the things I like about a series project, is that there's a somewhat stated beginning and a stated end. So it can be kind of goal oriented. The other, I can be inspired by any number of things. It could be a book. It could be something that someone said.
Another one of your series that I saw on the website, and I'll just say this too, that you have a new website coming up.
In process.
Yes. So that'll be exciting to see. But the current website has all these series, and so we just spoke about the figurative. But I want to also talk about the seed series. And that's more of like the utilitarian side, I would say, right, of your work.
Yes.
Everything else is sort of ornamental, but this is the utilitarian side of it. And the seed does represent the origin. It all starts with a seed. Can you give us a little background on the inspiration for the seed project and just your relationship with seeds? The seeds that are in your work are actually... they make me think of dinosaur seeds or something, you know, like of that archaic age. But yeah, can you talk about that?
Yes. The seed is a huge influence to a body of my work. And as a clay artist, to make utilitarian work is par for the course. Mm-hmm. that's one of the wonderful things about ceramics. You can make art. You can make things that you eat and drink out of be art, which I think is so exciting. So the seed project specifically started back in 2009 when a fellow artist, Sienna Sanderson from Taos, visited my studio and saw some of the work I was making. And she said, have you ever seen this book about macro photography of seeds? And I hadn't.
You said macro photography?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So she brings me this book. It blows my mind. It's color-enhanced macro photography of seeds, and it's texture and forms that are just out of this world, but they're not. They are seeds up close and personal. We decided that we would do a show together. She would do drawings, and I would do pottery, utilitarian work. And mm-hmm. when we started talking about it to other people, a whole bunch of other people wanted to get in on it.
Yeah.
So, in short, we had our first seed show at the TCA Stables Gallery in 2009, and it was also an art and education show. Seeds are so exciting. They are the origins of life. They are the sex of the world. They are crucial. They are also beautiful and ornamental and functional. And that's where, when I brought it into my work, to play with textures and shapes on the outsides of bowls. Mostly I would do it on the outsides of bowls because I would start the bowl upside down and I would just cover basically the outside of what would be the seed, and then you could turn it over, and they're very utilitarian. Mm-hmm. I also did, I used those sort of textures on candle sconces and cups and things like that, where I just brought it into a more utilitarian use than a large, large coffee table type bowl. It was such an exciting project. I couldn't get enough of it. I still bring that kind of work, that kind of textures and forms into newer work. The seed show itself ran for 4 consecutive years. So we had seed 1, 2, 3, and 4. Over 3,000 kids were able to see the show here in Taos and participate in the educational programs. We're very, very proud of that. So I co-created that with Sienna Sanderson, Katie Woodall, and Claire Cote. And I still bring that into my work on a regular basis. And if you've never looked up close and personal at seeds, you'll be amazed. You'll be blown away.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I love to plant from seed.
Yeah.
And so I really, you pay, and you know, one of my favorites is the calendula seed.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, I'm sure you've.
Yeah.
And so when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, the textures, you, like you really nail a lot of the texture of the seed in those bowls that you make.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the possibilities are endless with what you can do with it. One of my favorites is the milkweed seed. I love the milkweed. And when it comes apart and it just sort of explodes into this furry, feathery, new sculpture that then gets blown and you know, blown by the wind and spread, and it's what the monarchs feed on, so it's incredibly essential.
Oh, and I thank you for that. Sort of talk to us a little bit about Good News, Good Planet and how it relates to your sculptural work.
Absolutely. It's Good News, Good Planet is a 2-minute it's radio spot. I guess today you the only thing you could call it is a podcast, but it's a 2-minute radio spot, really. So it's short and sweet. And it started, it started back in 2015. I was talking with friends who own KNCE, and I said, we could use a little good news in the morning. Could you read a nice story? Like, there's good news out there. I mean, back in 2015, the news was already starting to feel overwhelming.
Stressed.
And I was feeling overwhelmed. And one of the owners, Rita O'Connell, said, well, why don't you do it? Therein lies another, like, what starts a project?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just something that somebody else says, or someone hands you a book, or you get an idea because you're standing at in a coffee line or whatever.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, sure. And
had you ever done anything like that before?
No.
No, okay.
No. And so Max Moulton, who's another owner of KNCE, he's a tech guy, and he showed me how to use GarageBand on my Mac and told me what mic to buy. And, you know, in this day and age, it's pretty simple and small startup cost to start recording yourself. So fortunately, like 20 years ago, this probably wouldn't have been as possible.
Right.
Anyway, so I just started. I just was like, okay, I'm going to just read a good news story. So I would find them on the web. I would rewrite them into a shorter format. And I started recording them, and KNCE started playing them. And it was such an exciting project because I loved reading that news. Like, there's so much good stuff happening in the world, and nobody is talking about it on major media. So I started doing it, and then playing it on KNCE in the town of Taos. Then within a year, I mean, people would come up to me in the grocery store and start singing the jingle, you know, that kind of thing. Good news, good planet. And I would just get so happily flustered, like in the thank you so much. And people have, I had one woman come to me at Coco's at the coffee shop just last year, and she came up to me. She said, you saved my day today. She said, I woke up so sad. And she said, and then I just listened to this story. And she told me the story she listened to. And she was in tears, and she hugged me. And I was so, that's why I do it. And so it's all about good news stories about the planet. It's about people doing good things for the reason of it's the right thing to do. Whether it's people helping people doing positive environmental things. I keep religion and politics out of it. We don't need that. There's plenty of that out there. I don't need to cover that. And really what it comes down to, again, my love affair with the planet, is that when we're good to ourselves, it's easier to be good to the planet. When we're good to the planet, we're good to ourselves. We all need clean water, clean air, you know, a safe place to live. We come from this earth, and I don't understand not taking care of it. I have no concept of how we can willingly poison the water and the earth and ravage her.
And each other.
And well, then it sort of leads to that. I really believe that. It's sort of like someone who abuses animals has a hate for themselves. Someone who abuses the earth, there's something wrong that you don't see your connection. Like, this is where you come from. This planet, you don't just stand on it, you're part of it. And I think we're going to get to that point somewhere in humanity where it's going to be something that we all have to embrace because it's the right thing to do. And it actually feels really good to embrace and love this planet because it's the only one we have.
the only one we're going to get.
It's the only one, as far as we know, that we're going to get, the big blue marble. And Good News, Good Planet, what it serves to do is like what I said about people coming up to me. When people realize that there's hope in the world, that there's good things that they can do, it changes everything. You know, then they go off and have a good day. Then they do something nice for somebody else. Then they think about, oh, there's something, they have this idea that they want to sell cookies so they can raise money to, you know, this is a story I did years ago, keep the coal company off this piece of land. And then in this particular story, this mother and daughter raised so much money out of their little donut shop selling cookies that they actually bought a mountain, and they kept the coal company out completely. Like, and I, what I want Good News, Good Planet to do is to inspire people that if you have that idea, oh, I wish we could do this. Well, you know what? Just go do it.
Maybe they just need to call Rita O'Connell.
She got right. Thing that you get a spark on, whether it's something you've wanted to do for the longest time or whether someone says something and you go, huh, oh, okay. You know what? Just go for it. Go for it. Do it. See what happens.
Right.
And that's what I want this program to do as well. It's Good News Planet. Like, you have an idea to do something nice in your neighborhood, in your community, whatever, for an animal, you want to save animals, you know, do it. Just do it, because you're getting that information for a reason. You're getting that, you know, your body doesn't lie. You know, when you hear something and you get that tingle in your stomach, or you meet someone and you get that tingle in your stomach or wherever, you know, it just, that's there for a reason.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is, and we're going to laugh, but spiritual interdependence.
Right.
Right. It's like, we must all do the one thing that we're supposed to be doing, so that when we come together, all of those pieces come together.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And on a spiritual level, that means trusting that gut.
Yes, absolutely.
And that feeling, or those words from that complete stranger that planted a seed, sparked a notion, right?
Led to a project, led to affecting other people and the world. Spiritual interdependence for me is that connection of us to everything.
Yeah.
Everything from your connection to your partner, to your dog, to the trees out in your yard, to the people that you don't know. We're all connected. We are. We just are. We're all from this earth. And we have to get back to embracing that.
Yeah. I mean, because there's so many walls that have been put up.
Yeah.
That we have to, you know, and I think it's getting back to square one with self.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's funny because a lot of these interviews, you can't help but to acknowledge, you know, COVID and quarantine and what that did. And for some, you know, and it affected everyone differently.
Yeah.
And we all are, we're going to all come out of it with different things.
Yes.
But the one thing we'll all come out, I think, in common with is a better understanding for ourselves, whether you want to accept it or not.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think now we're at that point where, you know, the tribe is being built.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
There will be many silver linings from this COVID experience. And I am no way in underplaying how serious or horrible it is.
Right.
But it's transformation, and there will be, people will come out differently and in good ways as well. The isolation, like what you're saying, like that has forced people to be with themselves. Oh my gosh, who am I when I'm not going out on Friday nights, or I'm not going into the office, and I'm literally spending days on end with myself. That's really difficult for some people, but it's also really enlightening, I think. For me as an artist, that wasn't the hard part.
Mine either. Right.
That was not the hard part. But I meditate. I learned to meditate back in 2015, I think it was, is when I started. And that really changed my life. And that's that going inside and letting go of everything, and then letting your body sort of help navigate you through the world. The days that I can have a nice 30-minute meditation, or even 20 to 15 minutes, are always better days. It's like getting in touch with yourself. And meditating can be just the simple thing. You don't have to be a guru. You can just sit in a room in a comfortable spot by yourself, shut your eyes, and be quiet. That's it. And try not to think. It takes practice to not think. Sometimes you do think and it happens, but eventually your mind learns to quiet down. It just, because it says, oh, you want me to quiet down? Okay. But it's a habit you need to build. But that's what a lot of people will have, some version of that, even if they haven't intentionally started to meditate because of COVID, but suddenly they're intentionally by themselves in a room, and hopefully they've turned off the screens once in a while so they can have that experience.
Welcome back to the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. That was Paul Ivan's Crazy Daisy. As an artist, Paul Ivan divides his creative time between making music and rendering colorful and witty, life-size and handheld paintings inspired by innocence, failure, boredom, and a lack of humor. Before the break, I was talking with Mandy Stapleford about the origin of a project, her inspirations as a ceramicist, and how unexpected conversations and something as small as a seed can initiate the spark to create a series of work. In 1998, Mandy moved to Taos, New Mexico, and has exhibited her work in various galleries throughout the state. As a result of her dedication to creating such mystical works of art, Stapleford was the winner of New Mexico Art in Public Places 2010. Let's continue my conversation with Mandy Stapleford and hear about her upcoming solo exhibition, A Nobility of Beast, and how this project has unfolded. What's up next for you? So we've got Mandy Stapleford, the sculptural artist, the two-minute podcast, Good News, Good Planet. Mm-hmm. And then you have more work coming up that folks here in Taos would be able to participate in now that the TCA has opened its doors back up.
Yes.
And they're doing a lot of great things. We're doing a lot of great things.
Oh, it's so exciting. Exciting to be here. I have to say, being on the stage, it's surreal because it's very dramatic. It's just Crystal and I on the stage in an empty auditorium, but it's very magical.
It is very magical. The lighting, you know, really adds to it.
Yes, it really does.
But you've got some work coming here to the TCA, and I'll just, you know, it's Nobility of the Beast. And so can you walk us through that and sort of explain to us what Nobility of the Beast is, what we can look forward to with your exhibit?
Yes. So the full name of the show is A Nobility of Beasts, A Ceramic Narration of Bestial Assemblage. It started with the idea to narrate nouns, collective nouns for animals in ceramic. The collective noun for a lot of beasts is a nobility. So that's where the title of the show came from. Collective nouns for animals actually started back in the 14th century from a book called the Boke of St. Albans, which was it started as a hunter's guide to like be able to describe when you came back, like, oh, I saw a bevy of quail or whatever. So that's just the short of the beginning of it. But the show is, there are 27 framed pieces that will be at the TCA. I'm publishing a book on that specific series of the bestial assemblage of the smaller framed pieces, that it will also be intermixed with seven large beasties of mine that nobody has seen unless they've been in my studio. So it's going to be, I believe, a fantastical show,
unveiling.
A fun show, and really an unveiling for a lot of the work. The smaller pieces, the Nobility of Peace framed pieces, are brand new. I began them in March, and I'm very excited about it. I'm really proud of this series. If you're in Taos, please come see these up close and personal, because this will be the only time, as the pieces sell, they will no longer be in one place. So right now, there'll be 27, the entire series will be exhibited But then the pieces will be, just once the show is taken down, will be distributed to their new owners, and they'll be off into the world.
Limited so time offer.
It really is. Yes. It really is. So I really hope if you're in Taos that you'll come and see the show. It'll be a lot of fun. It also has its own environmental message. The show began as, like I said, I was excited about narrating in clay nouns of assemblage, but what it became was, as I was making this work, I would often, on my computer in my studio, I'd be watching documentaries on the animal that I was making, like nature documentaries. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be watching these shows and learning all about turtles and just like loving it. And then inevitably I would be exposed to some of the horrors that was happening to the animals. The idea of extinction and just the sadness of the possible fates of these animals. So the show is still very lighthearted, and it's very much about the energy and beauty of all of these different animals. But it's also an environmental, it's an ode to the environment. It's my homage to all of the animals of this planet. I was only able to do a series, a limited series because of the number of frames I could get. But it's really a love affair of animals and their place in this world.
Yeah. Now you said, so it's a limited edition, so to speak, right? But do you think you would do it again with different animals? Or is like the thing is done, it's done, moving on?
It's really interesting you ask that because, like I said, there's 27 pieces. And so the book, The Charm of Goldfinches, led to another book. I was showing that book to an artist friend, Dan Cassidy, in Taos, and he's my neighbor, and he went running home, and he came back, and he said, have you ever seen this, A Compendium of Collective Nouns? And I was like, oh my gosh, a way thicker book. so it would, just hundreds and hundreds of them. So I actually ended up having to do spreadsheets I was like, okay, what? Because I only had enough frame for 27 frames.
Right.
So I had spreadsheets, and then I would have to kind of go through and decide, well, not only which ones would make the cut, but would they be raku fired, or would they be high fired electric cone 6 clay fired, stoneware clay, which has two different surfaces. So the show is split up that way too. Like, okay. Some animals are raccooned and some are high fire electric, much sort of brighter colors, painterly finishes. So I had to narrow, and I had narrowed it down to like 56, but I only had 27. So over the time I was making them, I would like every day be like, okay, what's next? What's next? Oh, I don't know. And so there were, a good off the final 56 sheet, there were 20 some that didn't make the cut.
Right. So, I feel bad for it
now. Right? So we'll see. Right now that series came to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. If I did it again, I would do it as a group series. Like, okay, the next 26 or whatever it ends up being. And I would, it would look a little different because the timing would be different. The mm-hmm. frames will be, the framing that I used literally was out of stock. We had just enough to do 20, like that won't exist anymore. So these are such a singular experience with these pieces. So who knows? Because there was, one of the ones I wanted to do, I didn't get to, was a cast of crabs. I thought that would be really fun. Because crabs can be really colorful and funny looking. And so we'll see. Time will tell if there'll be another. I'm not saying no. I'm just saying not right now.
Well, at least you did that spreadsheet.
Yes, I have that. I have all that saved just in case when I'm ready to start again.
Yeah. So Nobility of Beast, the exhibit here at TCA, mm-hmm. but you're also writing. Is this your first time writing a book?
Actually, it's my second. I wrote a book about being on Etsy, how to get your work on Etsy. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've always sort of created things and then tried to sell them. And I've had a shop on Etsy since 2009. Mm-hmm. And I have a commercial business called The Quoted Cup, where you can get quotes on cups of anything you want. But I wrote a book called From Artistic to Entrepreneur, How to Get Your Work on Etsy. This book is specifically more of an art book. There are captions for each of the pieces, but it comes out as more as a coffee table art book. And there'll be a very limited edition hardbound copy.
Yeah.
A very limited edition number of the hard copy. I'm sorry, let me say that again.
Yeah.
There will be a very limited number of hardcover books, very limited edition on that. And then there's also a soft cover version of the book. And both will be here at the TCA.
For when you unveil
during
the
exhibition. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, very cool.
So it was exciting. I actually worked with, I'm going to name drop here a little bit, with Kelly Pashok, who has she does book designing for a living, and she lives in Taos. We are blessed with so many amazing artists and people who can help artists that live in this town. I was just had a great experience with her.
It's very true. Yeah, that is true. So the images in the book will be the same pieces of art.
Yes.
That are up.
It's so that specific series.
It's that specific
series.
Right.
So if you can't afford a piece, you can buy a book.
See, and that's what I love about you is that you price point. Yeah. You have something for every budget.
Yeah.
And that's important. But then there's that serial entrepreneur you were talking about.
Yep.
That's really important. Well, is there anything else that you would like to say about your work, about Nobility of Beast, the origin of a project?
I am very blessed to be a working artist. And in the last few, I've done a million different jobs, as most artists do. But I've been fortunate in the last 3 or 4 years to work solely for myself. So I spend a lot of time in my studio. It's my sanctuary. It's where I spend most of my waking hours.
Yeah.
And I am just thrilled to have a solo show at the TCA. It's launched a number of other things. Like, that actually launched the Nobility of Beast. Like, I had this idea, and then when I got the show at the TCA, I was like, that's where I'm going to do it. And then I had space to do it. That's the other interesting thing that can make a project like this really take off, is there's the idea, but then suddenly I actually had a physical space to put the work in. And that really helped me hone it in my mind as to what it was going to look like. So all of these parts come together, from the person that inspires you to do a piece of work, to like, well, where's it going to go? Who is it for? What is it about? There was just all of these energies that came together to make the work happen.
Yeah.
And when I find that, when I just surrender to that, it flows. Instead of when I try and make something happen, it doesn't flow.
Right.
But when I let go and surrender to what's the next creative thing, what's happening next, we got this frame, and then, like, amazing framer, John McCann of Ranchito's Framing, incredible framer. I highly recommend him. He helped me pick the backings and the frames for this show. And so I think overall what I would say is I'm just thrilled to be a working artist, to be creative. I think we all have creative in us, some more than others, in whether they want to follow it or not. And I couldn't be happier to be an artist here in Taos.
Yeah. No, that's really special.
And especially during COVID, actually.
I've been having that same thing where prior to COVID, I was doing my thing. But it's like COVID happened and I had that time, right, to sit down. And I started a project, actually, which I had been wanting to start for a long time. And then it was just like boom, 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 boom. All these other things started presenting themselves.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
This opportunity came up.
How about
it? Yeah. And so, I think you said earlier, you know, it's the vulnerability, right? Being able to let go. But COVID put a lot of us in a position to where we sort of had to get to a place of trusting ourselves.
Yes.
And trusting the process.
Yes.
And knowing that because we're talking about origin of a project, yes. However, the origin of a project doesn't always start at the beginning, right? I mean, it's the beginning, the thought or the inspiration of the person saying something,
right?
But it doesn't always start at the beginning, but trusting wherever it starts,
right?
And allowing it to unfold,
yes.
And trusting that, you know, starts with that trust with self.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's letting one thing lead to another. And I do think that the bottom line of all of that is just start. If you've got an idea, you know what? At least write it down. Like, and then watch that start to flow. What does that turn into?
Yeah.
No matter what it is. It doesn't have to be a quote-unquote creative project, you know.
It can be anything, yeah.
Whatever it is you have an idea to do that you haven't yet done, do it.
Yes, and that is... And if you don't do it, we'll put Rita O'Connell on you.
Yes,
I'm gonna leave her alone. Okay. Well, it was so good to sit down and finally meet you face to face, because I hear you on the radio, you hear me on the radio.
We had been conversing with each other, not knowing who each other was
for months, and here we are,
right, with the KNCE chat and Facebook stuff.
It was great.
It was wonderful to be here. Thank you so much, Crystal.
Yeah,
thank you. A real pleasure.
And I can't wait to see Nobility of Beast here at the TCA.
Thank you.
It'll be exciting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was my conversation with Ceramus's podcast host and writer, Mandy Stapleford. Stapleford will unveil her solo exhibition, A Nobility of Beast, a ceramic narration of bestial assemblage, at the Taos Center for the Arts Encore Gallery, Friday, October 16th. For more information about this exhibit, go to tcataos.org. This has been the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. Share this broadcast with friends and family by going to tcataos.org. The Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor, and by our local business partner, Lamberts of Taos. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. And thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Crystal Starr. And on the way out, here's more music from Paul Ivan Fra'idam.